Welcome back here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. We've been joined in the last segment by Philip Peterson. Philip's the chief investment strategist. He's also the head of capital markets research at Manulife, and he's been kind enough to stick around for another segment. Faisal, we talked in the last segment a little bit about, we got Philip's opinion about where we thought the year was going to be at the start of the year, what we faced in that first quarter and a little bit beyond. Now we've got to figure out how to position going forward. How do we take advantage of the volatility and of what, you know, rising interest rates, inflation, whatever we expect to have happen? How are we going to take advantage of this now? Philip, let's get your opinion to start. From this point forward, I want to get a sense from you of what you're thinking about. And again, we're thinking about as a retirement portfolio, as a balanced portfolio. Give us your sense of what we should be thinking about for the rest of this year.
The first thing, and we've been talking about this through early 2021, but also the back half of 2020, the first thing we have to consider in a retirement portfolio and balanced portfolio is if I'm dependent on that portfolio feeding me income, I'm not going to get it out of bonds in the same way that we would have thought about it over the last, say, 10 or 20 years. So how do I replace that income? First, how do I mitigate for losses? Because we have to consider, Dave, you mentioned earlier that we saw the 10-year Treasury yield in the United States start the year at 91 basis points, finish at 174. And many people would say, oh, well, that's it, we're done. We don't think we're anywhere near finished in terms of a rising interest rate environment. So there are still headwinds for fixed income. Couple with that with the fact that yields are still very, very low, trying to generate a positive income out of bonds is going to be a little bit more challenging. And one of the ways that we have been recommending to offset that is by focusing on dividend, and in particular dividend growing stocks, whether that be in Canada and the United States or around the world. And this is an area that it addresses quality, because companies that can grow their dividend organically over time basically are well-run companies that are growing their business. So you have high quality there, and you have a very attractive income stream where many companies are paying in the 2.5 to 4, 4.5% range, which is more than double what you're getting out of the 10-year Government of Canada bond or the US 10-year Treasury. So we have been suggesting and recommending shifting from an overweight to fixed income where we started 2020 to an underweight fixed income, focusing more on equities, on dividend equities within bonds, because we never want to forget our defense. I get asked the question all the time, well, why should we even own bonds?
Yeah.
Because we can't predict the environment with any type of accuracy. You always need some type of defense, and there are segments of bonds that do well in a rising rate environment or are protected against a rising rate environment. These are short duration bonds, where bonds have maturities of less than 3 years. These are high yield bonds that are generating higher income than what you would see in governments and actually benefit from a stronger economic activity or economic growth. And investment grade bonds, again, looking at the shorter duration side, where you're capturing that higher yield benefit by not even aggressively pushing out the risk spectrum, but just moderately pushing out the risk spectrum into corporate debt.
Let's talk about the equity part of the portfolio when you're looking at the allocation of where you are geographically. Let's talk about where you're going into Canada, US, Europe, and the other parts of the world, emerging markets. Where do you see the breakdown in there?
Certainly, when I look at our model portfolio, it's fairly well distributed across geographies. We have been modestly reducing our US equity weight. It still stands at our largest weight in our portfolio, though, because we think the US is further along in terms of its economic reopening, going to see stronger earnings growth. Yes, you have that valuation there, but look, we have attractive returns, or we have an attractive return profile for US stocks over the coming year to 2 years. I'll give you the exact percentages. We are 65% in equities in our balanced portfolio. So just 5% overweight to equities right now. We would like to take that higher, but like many people, we've been waiting for a correction that hasn't come. We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, I'm quite comfortable with that 65%. 15% is in Canada. At the start of the year, we saw a positive environment for Canada. In fact, we think that Canada does have the potential to outperform the US, but we also have to take into consideration the downside risks there. So we don't want to be overweight Canada relative to the US, but we added to Canada at 15%. We have 25% in the United States. We have 10% in emerging markets, which has been that disappointment. But again, we look at things, asset classes, over a 12-month period, not a 3-month period. So over the next 12 months, we do see positive attributes to the emerging markets. And then we have another 15% to broad-based international. So largely that would be Europe, the UK, and Japan. And if we look at Canada, the US, and Europe, they've all actually performed in line with each other year to date. We haven't really seen one dramatically outperform the other. They've all generated returns in the high single digits to the very low teens, very attractive returns. We think they have the potential to continue to deliver positive returns over the next 12 months. It's that emerging markets that's been, you know, a little bit of a disappointment. But again, I never look at a short-term market or short-term result out of the markets and say, oh, we made a mistake. You know, the fundamentals are supportive of emerging markets doing well over the coming 12 plus months. You know, we stick to our weight there.
What do you think is holding emerging markets back, and what would be the catalyst for seeing it start to move forward?
Well, when we look at the breakdown of the emerging markets, 70% of the emerging markets is Asia, with 40% being China specifically. There was a lot of talk in the first quarter about China's credit impulse, or it's the amount of money being put into the Chinese economy as a result of loan growth. Well, that had peaked and started to roll over, and there were a lot of people that were fearful that this was going to result in slower economic growth out of China. Now, that's starting to dissipate because we haven't seen that. In fact, China is growing at a very healthy pace. And in fact, this credit impulse, the fading of this credit impulse makes sense. You need to support the economy a year ago when we were in the depths of the COVID lockdowns. You can start to remove that as the economy gets on its own footing and starts to grow and is supported by the reopening of the United States, of Europe, and other areas around the world. So we're starting to see that reverse a little bit. And as well, look, we had China and Asia, the emerging markets overall, deliver a phenomenal fourth quarter return. And it does stand to reason why you would get some profit taking. Again, we haven't seen that in the United States to the same extent, but that could just be a matter of time. So our work has led us to a number of rules. And one of those rules is that when you see a correction in the markets, whether it's the US, Canada, or others, and you don't see economic stress or a potential for a recession, your 1 year forward return is positive 90% of the time. So it tells you, hey, this is a buying opportunity. If you miss the emerging market opportunity in the fourth quarter, here's your opportunity to take advantage of it today.
Faisal, let me jump in. I've got one more question, if you don't mind. I want to get your sense, Philip, on this. This value versus growth trade, right? We certainly saw the high flyers, the tech companies, the growth companies rally last year and into the beginning of this year. You're seeing a bit of a rotation trade taking place. Where are you? What are your thoughts? Where are you positioned right now, value versus growth?
I definitely think we have seen a rotation. Well, we know we've seen a rotation as of, you know, I look at it at the end of October where the rotation really started. That was the end of the dominance of the tech sector and the consumer discretionary sector and the emergence of financials and energy kind of taking over. And that's where we are today. So it's been 6 months of this shift. I don't know if I would call it specifically value versus growth because there are segments of value that have been left behind. We think of value as just cheaper companies. Well, you know, some companies are cheap for reasons. I would look at it in terms of quality over, you know, Faisal, junk, you know, as you pointed out earlier. Also interest rate sensitivity, right? So right. Also, the other thing that we've seen over the last little while is that companies that are more interest rate sensitive, meaning, you know, when rates go up, they tend to underperform. That's what we've seen. As inflation expectations have been building, as that has been priced into yield curves and we've seen longer term bond yields shift higher, we call them long duration stocks or stocks that have high valuation, which means that a small change to the discount rate will really impact that price of that stock, you know, change that valuation to the negative. That's what we've seen. So I don't think it's as easy as value versus growth. I think it is, you know, quality versus junk and interest rate sensitivity versus interest rate beneficiaries.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Philip, we have about 30 seconds left on this. Let's talk about active versus passive. We're seeing a lot of individuals, advisors in my industry talking about just stick to the index itself. Is this the time to stay index focused, or get more of an active approach using different value growth, growth at a reasonable price, and the asset allocation you're referring to?
At this point, if you look at the makeup of the index in the United States, I would say you do not want to be passive right now, because the index is still heavily skewed towards technology stocks. You know, the FANGs still dominate that index, and they are longer duration, higher value valued stocks. So they're going to be more sensitive to changes in the interest rate environment, versus more active that can focus on dividend growers, can focus on quality, can focus on valuation, can focus on other aspects of the market that are doing well. So I would say in this environment, passive is not an ideal approach. And I'm seeing that with our active managers, that many of them are easily beating their benchmarks because this is an environment where you can do that.
Philip, we have to leave it there. We've run out of time. I want to thank you very much again for spending some time with us, sharing your insights and your go-forward position. We appreciate it.
Well, gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
We've been joined by Philip Peterson, who's the Chief Investment Strategist and the Head of Capital Market Research at Manulife. Faisal, we've got an upcoming seminar to try to make some sense of this, how to position through these periods and those that we're going to face in the future.
Yeah, this is the active management approach that Philip was talking about. How do you actually profit and protect? And let's talk about our five-pillar investment strategy. That will be on May 18th, 7 p.m., live online. Now, you need to register for this. So go to morethanmoneyradio.com. That's morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
All right. If you've been afraid of inflation, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. Do you want to learn how to profit from it? Stick around after the break. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.